Thank you for coming, for attending this Dharma Talk. Thank you for all of your help in supporting this community, both by attending, by practicing, and by financially supporting us. We need your help. Please continue if you can.
Prajna or Prajna, however you pronounce it, is without knowing. Without knowing. This is the knowing that transcends everything. Prajna. Before I do that, I'd like to thank everyone for attending. Thank everyone for attending on Zoom and attending in person here in the monastery in the Zendo. And please continue to come if you can. And also thank you for all the help that you've given to this organization, this monastery, and Sokokoji Buddhist community. And please continue to help us if you can, in whatever way that you can. Very much appreciated. Prajna. Prajna is a word that comes from jnan or jnan, and it means wisdom. And pra part is the wisdom that crosses over, as I understand it, not just an ordinary knowing of something, but something it sees beyond the polarities. So difficult to put that into words so that it fundamentally helps you or helps me or helps anyone begin to train your mind so that you can see more clearly, because it is so easy to just caught up in the circularity of this and that, up and down, back and forth, and right and wrong, correct and incorrect. Wisdom and confusion, all of the polarities, so easy to get caught up in that. But this is so why it is sometimes called mirror-like, is because what you're looking at is it's like a mirror, but it's not that the images in the mirror are reflecting back things you know about. It's reflecting back the mystery of the whole thing. You can't know what this is. But you can continue to look at everything and just receive it. It shows up, receive it. You see, whatever you see, the walls, the people, the carpeting, everything is showing up both in your life, everyday life, and in your mind stream are unreal. And again, it's difficult to go into the conceptual area. Because it doesn't particularly align itself with concepts, but teachers down through the centuries who have had some understanding, some insight, some understanding of prajna or prana, wisdom mind, want to share that, want to help others see this. So if they have students, there's probably a good chance that they can do that. If it's just an occasional lecture here and there, maybe something would happen. But without the sitting practice of meditation, it's probably not going to budge much. We'll be stuck on our belief. We'll continue to get relief from the suffering or the difficulty we have by doing any number of things. Something that may look silly to you, that somebody goes out in a field and hits a ball around like that, trying to put it in a hole. But to some people, that's what they do. That's how they keep from the suffering from getting too difficult. They have hobbies, they have sports that they're good at. Competition is all about entertainment, as you know. Not against that. Do whatever you want to do. By all means, do whatever you enjoy or like. Some ways of avoiding the reality of this and not seeing that it is a mirror and thinking it's over there. It's not that there's an actual reflection. That's why it's difficult to say, because it's not like I'm over here and what I'm looking at over there is being reflected back, that everybody looks like me or something like that. It's a little like that, but that doesn't really work because that misses it. That ties in too much to the relative dynamic that happens in a conventional mirror. It's worse than that. It's a mirror image is just used to show you what it actually is. You're not separate from it. Whereas looking in a mirror, you know that's a mirror, that's an image. But if you look in a mirror and see that that's unreal, you might take that understanding out. And when you walk down the driveway towards your vehicle or towards your sidewalk, you might realize that what you're looking at is a reflection of you. It's a reflection of what this is. I can't say it anymore directly. One who sees this does not know anything. But they don't miss anything. Sometimes this person is called the sage, the one who fundamentally is not separate from wisdom. Fancy name. But the one who is a sage doesn't see anything fancy. Everything is flat. And yet everything is colorful. Flat, colorful, not separate. But it's ordinary. As it has been said by other teachers, nothing special. I think it was Charlotte Joko Beck has a book by that title. Nothing special. The Tibetans have it, Tamo Geshepa, which means ordinary mind, that to realize your true nature is just to realize your ordinary mind. Thoughts may come and go. You are not hindered by thought patterns. You don't have to stop thoughts. As the great teacher, Thangpo Rinpoche, Tibetan Lama, said, you do nothing to thoughts, they will do nothing to you. Pretty clear statement. But then again, if you struggle trying to not think about something, then you're doing something with thoughts. But if you're validating a thought, thinking a thought that you're having is correct about someone else or something, you're doing something to thought. And if you turn away from it and act as if I'm just not going to think about it, that might be closer to something you could do. If you meditate a lot, you actually can train yourself to not particularly dwell on too much. I sometimes say to people, don't think about it, which is something that Katagiri Roshi once, back in the 70s, said to my preceptor, Choho, Mike, said, I remember Mike coming to me, I've told this story before, one day in like the mid-70s, like 75, something like this, and I said, I was telling Roshi about this and this, and I was having, and Choho said, you know what he said to me? And this is before Mike was ordained. He said, don't think about it. And I said, I remember just thinking, what, you know, how dare he say, don't think about it, as if you could just not think about it. Well, now I see what he's referring to. That's quite humorous. But at the time, it really kind of enraged me. I don't know if it did show he doesn't get too enraged. That's more my bailiwick. Wisdom. Prajna. Seeing the true nature of what this is. That it is not two separate things, nor is it one thing. It is empty of other. That's why it's called mirror-like. It's because you know that if you look in a mirror, there really isn't anything there. That's completely unreal. It's just a good piece of glass. You can stand in front of it and maybe have a lot of fun making faces. But if you step off to one side, is it a mirror? Does it continue to be a mirror? Is it reflecting something? Look closely. And while you're looking closely, when you get done looking closely, then go sit and face this mirror, a wall. See your true nature. I can't do that for you, but I can encourage you to do that. It's possible for you to do this. And quite often that's all you need to hear. I know that was probably the most helpful thing that was ever said to me by my teacher, Chogyam Rinpoche. You can do this. Let's have some questions, sir.
Sure, bowing. I think you said something like, the one who sees what this is doesn't know anything.
Yes.
And I'm thinking of when you lead opening the iMind. You seem incredibly knowledgeable about the art, and like you have a vocabulary. Yes. Is that different than what is not knowing in that sense?
Well, it's the fundamental understanding When I say you don't know, it doesn't mean that you don't have knowledge about what the difference between a door and a window. Otherwise, you'd be walking through windows. Same thing with the collection of knowledge that anyone would have here. Some people, their function in life or their careers are very much dependent on, all kinds of knowledge and formulas and so on. So I'm not sure if that's kind of goes without saying. I'm saying the fundamental nature of this is like a mirror. Let's go further. We don't have to stop there, but we need another question.
Shadow bowing. Is there something that we do with that relative knowledge that snags us, or yeah, I think that's the question.
We believe it that is true, or we disbelieve it. We have to take a position. We add something to it, like taking a position on. We fill the whole situation up with our position on the whole thing. More?
Not yet.
Yes.
When you're bowing, when Rinpoche said to you, you can do this.
Yes.
Did you know what he was talking about?
Yes, I did, because I was presenting to him a whole basket full of crap that I was dealing with. I was telling him this and how I was dealing this and how I couldn't work with this and I couldn't work with that. I talked about a little bit, not a lot, but I knew I didn't have a lot of time and I needed to tell him what I was dealing with. So it was, I don't know if you'd call it a confessional, but it was very much like, what's the conventional thing, spilling your guts kind of thing. And it was like, just, it was embarrassing to do that, but I feel like in order to get a response from him, where it will help me have some confidence in him or trust in him. And what he's telling me to do is to sit on my butt and look at, in the case of Shamatha Vipassana, practice a little bit different than Chikantaza, sit and look at the floor. Not much different. 3 feet out is much different than a wall. It's just your eyes or eye gaze is down. So I had to say some things that I was having difficulty with. And he listened, nodded. I could tell that he was listening. He gave me no advice at all, other than he knew I was meditating. I told him, that's one of the things I told him, I'd been meditating, how long I'd been meditating, which I was quite proud of, and how many hours a day I was sitting, which I was quite proud of. So he could see all of that. But it didn't matter. He still came back with, keep sitting, you can do it. We can do it. So it meant a lot to me.
When you're bowing, so just to focus on that word, this, or you could do it.
Yes.
What was he implying?
Understanding what this is, because I made it very clear that I needed to understand what this is. I need to understand fundamentally what this is. And it looks like Buddhism can help me do this. That's why I'm here. I'm here to listen to you. And I think I probably told him that I was a student of his, or asked to be. I don't think I asked. I told him I was. Like when I said, just it reminds me when he put me in a solitary retreat for 10 days in 1974. He actually sent me in. I didn't ask. But before he told me to go into retreat, he said,
who inspire you?
I can't do a very good imitation of his voice, but very high-pitched voice. Who inspire you? And I pointed to him because I was too embarrassed to say anything else. It's very difficult, embarrassing. It's embarrassing to be a fool in front of a sage.
What did he do?
What did he do? What?
After
that, he said, so you want to go into retreat?
Didn't he do something like this?
Yeah, he said, me? Yes. And I did not laugh. I was way too stuck on fear. And they said, so I think you can go into retreat. Don't sit more than 8 hours a day. Like I was going to do that. But he meant it. And then he just laid out what I should do in retreat. Give me some feedback on what I should be eating. Nothing, don't do anything different than what you would do ordinarily. but just sit.
When you're bowing, how can we receive what is unreal or illusory?
How can you receive what is unreal? So all you're doing is opening yourself up to something that is already the case. You're already not separate from that. There is nothing to receive. But you won't discover that as long as you keep imputing that your friend is over there and your enemy's over there, and you've got to get help from your friend and get away from your enemy. Or if you're fighting that polarity, if you believe your thoughts, then you'll continue to spin. But if you realize what this is, there'll be no warfare anywhere with anything, even though you have people attacking you. Doesn't mean you cave in and let them beat you up. It doesn't mean you set yourself on fire either.
When you're bowing,
you got a lot of questions. Go ahead.
In the story about Michael, Shoho Mike, and
yes,
and Katagiri Roshi, don't think about it. Is it possible for us not to think about something?
It is.
How?
Once there's a understanding of the nature of thoughts and there's an understanding of the nature of the thinker, then you just don't hook it up. And then when it's time to think about something, so you become very pragmatic about it, practical. You don't sit and chatter to yourself about anything anymore. It just stops by being seen. By being aware of it, not by stopping the thinking. When Trungpa Rinpoche says in Sadhana Mahamudra, puts a stop to thoughts, he doesn't mean that one head just up and stops the thoughts. It just seeing the nature of thoughts puts a stop to thoughts. In other words, it's no longer hindered by thoughts. There is no such thing as a thought. Just looks like it. That's the illusion. There's no thoughts. There are no thoughts. There's no thinker. There isn't anyone. This is an illusion. And if you believe what I'm saying, then you have work to do. You hear me say over and over again, I make a statement and then I say, don't believe me. And that's why I'm encouraging you to look at it. Because if you believe what I'm saying, you might as well be going into a garage and slamming the garage door. Go ahead. Ondo.
Ondo Bai. You said that when we're looking out, it's like a mirror. But sometimes it's not quite like a mirror. It's a mystery. What do you mean by it's a mystery?
We don't know what this is. If you think you know this and know that, I'm not talking about a carpeting and a wall and lights and people and a computer. We know all of that, but you can actually see this in such a way that you don't just look at all this, the items that are here, they're showing up. You actually see what it is fundamentally. And if you see what it is fundamentally, it's completely mysterious. It's just unbelievably mysterious. This is astonishing. Situation. If consciousness is seeing this, and not a person who was born in my case in 1941, with a terrible education and difficult upbringing, or we could talk about yours, we could talk about that structure that where you slowly become what you kind of customized into a particular kind of person by your peeps and your culture and your education and your hopes and fears and running away from this and towards that and the friends you hang out with, all of that looks like, happenstance. It just happens that way. But nothing happens. It's not real. It's an illusion that deludes us into thinking there's a right and a wrong and we can somehow do things, some things correctly and other things, we better not do that because we don't know how to do it. And it's just we have a constant chatter going in our head about everything and everybody as if there are real people everywhere. That's why the vow to be with all things, save all beings, You see what this is. You see that there's no one to save. There are no beings. I cannot say it more forcefully. Maybe I could yell. I think a few times I do get kind of loud. You need to see it. If you see it, the work is done. There is no more work, other than you may have students. And if you don't have students, don't gather any. Don't be a teacher. You need to be a teacher. The students won't let you go anywhere else. More?
Divine, are you saying that consciousness, when consciousness sees consciousness, is that like what you're also finding out when you say not, it doesn't know? It
there isn't anything to know.
Like beginner's mind?
Beginner's mind is a more of a path quality of sitting down wholesale and just, you know, drop your knapsack outside the door and sit down and look at the wall. Have a willingness to not know what this is or how to do it. Don't improve. That doesn't mean that you won't get used to sitting still. But the whole improvement idea is just baloney. This doesn't mean, and I want to emphasize this doesn't mean that some people who meditate and practice meditation or mindfulness, that this won't be helpful to settling down and not making their life so confusing or the lives of those around us. You have tend to, even if you do not fundamentally awaken to your true nature, which takes a lot of work and is not that common, still, sitting practice of meditation can help you settle down so you don't stir things up so much. You don't take yourself so seriously. You're more apt to be responsible for the things you've pushed on and the things the chaos you might have caused. You might just slow down and be a little bit more respectful to other people's confusion, not to mention their sanity. Because sometimes people are very confusing and are confused, but if you give them a break and just meet them where they're at and be kind, even though they may have not been kind to you, but you're kind to them, you're respectful to them. It might be not letting them off the hook when they just abused you in some way, but you might be able to say to them, so you're having a hard time, or maybe it isn't even that. Maybe you don't mention it at all. Maybe you change the topic altogether and saying, how's your Uncle George? Wasn't he sick last week? And then they'll say, what are you talking about that for? Don't you see how mad I am at you? Say, yeah, it seems like you're pretty mad. So don't agree, don't disagree, a little bit. More about that if you have it. That's a good area because that's not easy to operate in. You don't have to be an enlightened sage to treat people kindly. Go ahead.
Divine, I have more questions about the ultimate.
Go ahead.
Consciousness seeing consciousness.
Yes, it doesn't see anything. It's just a way of talking about it. We have to find some way. If you train your mind and you eventually realize your true nature, which will not necessarily be an event, it will not necessarily be an experience. If it's an experience or even an event, then it will fade because it's in relative situation. It's worse than that. It's better than that. When I say it's worse, you've heard me say it 100 times. It is devastating to the ego and self-centeredness. But it's better than that because then you see there never was an ego. Never was a real being anywhere. So it doesn't even go away. It hangs around. Tries to get your attention occasionally. More?
Divine, so when consciousness sees consciousness,
yes,
it can see relative truth. And the relative truth is a mystery, or they're not
the whole thing is a mystery. It's mysterious. We can't see it. You can't really see what this is. Can't see. Yeah. That's right. It makes you dizzy. But you won't have a question necessarily because you see what it is so deeply that you don't, there's nothing, there's no other. It's empty of other. So that it's only if there's some other, you might have a question about that. Those are gone. And even if some comes up, hi. Even if someone comes up to you and puts you on the spot with, because they're smarter than you are, puts you on the spot with some kind of question about what you said or what you did, or or correct you. Sometimes people come and say, you know, you got those, that one school of thought, those guys, and said, you know, you had those transposed, and they correct you. You know, you can, don't thanks, rather than defend yourself, even if you know that they've got it backward. It won't make any difference. It makes no difference. Right and wrong don't make any difference. Yes, please.
When you're bowing, you tell us frequently to we have to see this for ourselves.
I do.
But I think you just said you can't see it.
You can't.
So how can we see
That's how you see it. That's how it's seen. But it has to be some way of saying it. Otherwise, you just can't say anything. I think Ramana Maharshi, after 20 years of sitting in a cave, he went into a cave after he realized his true nature, not before. He went and sat in a cage and let his mind cook for 20 years. When he came out, he didn't say much. What is he going to say? More about it if you haven't. It's a not knowing. You won't have a credential. You won't have a feeling of knowing. Some people teach that way. Some people have whole books, how they talk about their enlightenment experience. And now they're a teacher. And now they're accepting students and all of that. I'm not accepting students.
When you're bowing, so is it a kind of surrender?
It can look that way. But there's no one to surrender anything, and there's nothing to surrender. Not to go on and on about that emptiness quality, but it's like that. There's nothing to do. This sound looks exciting. Wait a minute, wait, before you ask me that question, what is the question?
When you're bowing, you said there's nothing to do, but it takes a lot of work.
It does. No, there's nothing. It takes a lot of work before you can see there's, you just wasted your time.
Is meditation a waste of time?
From a certain point of view, yes. But from another point of view, no. But you could say that about golf. Or what's that other horseshoes? It's an exciting game. Yes.
Did you bow in? What did you mean when you said you're not accepting students?
Did I say that? No, I'm not. You want to be a student of mine?
Mm-hmm.
No, I accept it.
Too late.
Too late. Of course, it's so situational. What I'm saying by that is I'm not promoting trying to get students. What I do promote, I would like to get in front of as many people as possible so that there's a small percentage of people that might resonate with the way I'm teaching this, and I think it's pretty small. It has been so far, not very many people. I don't have hundreds and thousands of students like my teachers did. So it's just a way of saying, come this way and we'll see if that works. I can't make any promises to anyone. More? Yes, sir.
Jeez, am I? Is the without unreality rather than exclusion?
How do you mean?
Jeez, am I? The title was Prajna is without knowing. And I think I understood you to say to Shoto that it's not excluding relative knowledge. I'm wondering.
No, it's relative. The relative knowing is, of course, that's going to continue. Prajna is the wisdom that has gone beyond the relativity of existence, non-existence, right and wrong, up and down, back and forth, Buddhas and sentient beings, wisdom and confusion. The main one being the big one for everyone, because some people will never even entertain 10 seconds of thought about the word wisdom. They don't even see that. They just see, they're just stuck with their own conditioning, so on. But everybody knows about life and death. And so it transcends that. So that's a knowing that goes beyond the polarity. And that's a good one. It goes beyond existence, non-existence. And it and it's the way in which it goes beyond them, it sees that they're the same thing. Without concluding that, if there's a conclusion of that, then there's some part of consciousness that's concluding about two other things, existence, non-existence, and then the consciousness concludes that they're the same, creates another polarity. We conclude it, and what has been concluded, so nothing happens. If that clicks with you, then don't keep it, don't throw it away, don't do nothing, don't do anything with it. You can see this. It takes work.
Zim bowing.
Zim, what was that big smile about?
That felt like a calculus equation. I got a little lost there.
Well, I don't even know anything about calculus. The longest conversation, it wasn't a conversation, it was a description that I had with my 18-year-old grandson. Longest one. He's never talked to me much at all the time he was growing up. He would never really give me much eye contact or anything. But now he's at the university with a full scholarship. And I wonder why. But I asked him to describe calculus to me. Could he explain what calculus is? And he began and talked for 20 minutes. He told me all about calculus. And I actually understood some of what he was saying. And because he allowed me to ask questions, things that he said, I don't remember any of it, but it was very exciting for me to have him tell me what something he had learned about. So do you want to explain what calculus is to me?
No, I have another question, please. Zim bowing. I know awareness is important, but why is awareness so important?
Because the consciousness in which things occur is like that space where the thoughts are arising, or the space in which these words are appearing, and either on Zoom or in our immediate environment, there has to be a space in order for us to see more clearly what this is. And if we don't see that, then we tend to go to war with ourselves, go to war with others. Life can get very, very difficult. Look at the world stage, or whatever you want to call it. The whole world is just terrible, terrible suffering being inflicted by supposedly intelligent, well, I'm going to say men, but they're not. There's something has been really hammered in that area of intelligence, and usually it is flooded with fear. So to be able to begin, to use your question, to begin to look at the fear, each one of us needs to do this. Look at the fear and see the space that the fear arises in, and see that the fear comes and goes based on conditions and on belief in a self that can be harmed or a self that can get ahead. But if you just look at the space, nothing happens in the space. If you think things occur in the space, you'll continue to grasp some things, reject other things, and shut down another thing. So awareness is very, very important. To train your awareness to see clearly what this is, and eventually you will see what it is if you continue. I think you can do it. I think anyone can do it. It just might take a lot of intention. More, Zim?
Yes, please, Zim bowing. Why is it that sometimes looking at it, maybe over time, when you look at it and look at it and look at it, especially if it's something that there's like suffering, and you've noticed maybe you've been avoiding it, how come looking at it sometimes can bring healing? Or maybe that's not the best word to use, but maybe like neutral? Does that make sense?
A little bit. There's a lot happening in that area when you say looking at it. It might take quite a long time, because the fundamental misunderstanding is that there's someone who is having a problem. It's not to say that the problems don't come and go. And looking at them, if I go in the direction you seem to be asking about, they tend to, because you're no longer pushing it away, you're looking at it. You're no longer making excuses or blaming someone else for it, you're looking at it. You're no longer shutting down or turning away from it, you're looking at it. So that can back off. That's why I was saying someone the first 3 weeks they meditate quite often, because a lot of that kind of real surfacey confusion starts to die down just by being included. So people can get quite excited about 3 or 4 weeks or even a month or a couple of years of mindfulness practice. But they can also get into areas that take a lot more, to use the weightlifting idea, heavy lifting, a lot more intense meditation to go in and totally work in that labyrinth of confusion that can get deeper and deeper. So it's different with each person. Some people's karma is not as dense and dark and prickly and smelly, and other people it's so intense they really need to work very closely with the teacher and with the teaching and with the community so they can do that heavy lifting or that hard unrewarding kind of work that is called the spiritual path. More. Further questions? Any in here?
Thank you.
You're welcome, Tim. Yes. Go ahead, Yun. I'll come back to you.
Yuhong Baoyin, I have a few questions about your teacher. So my first question is, when you met your teacher told you Trungpa Rinpoche, and he told you just sit, just sitting. Did he know you have other practice too? What I mean, you said you also practice and taught like tantra practice or other mantra or other types of practices. No.
When I met him, the only thing I was doing was reading his books and also maybe a dozen other books on Buddhism. There weren't very many back in the 60s and 70s. But I've read a lot of books. I ran into his book, and that's when I got a hold of him and found out I could meet him. And I was reading Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism. By the time I met him, I'd probably read that book a half a dozen times. And eventually I started reading it with others. That didn't happen right away. At first, I just would go through it and go through it and go through it. And you've studied that book, so you can see maybe see the value of that. But I wasn't doing anything other than just sitting meditation. But the kind of sitting meditation I started with was Shikantaza, which is what I teach now. And eventually he, because he's a tantric master, he got me into practicing creation completion practices, mantra visualization, deity yoga, sometimes called. So I was doing that with his guidance. I might be missing what you're asking about.
No. That's exactly what I'm asking. I just came back a retreat, and one of the teachers, she knows you. She also, she said she did 3 month training with you at Shambhala. I don't know where Naropa, but
what is her name?
Judith Brown.
Again.
Judith Brown. Her last name is Brown.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And she looked it up on. She asked me. We have a like one-on-one interview, and she looked at your website. And she said, if she's near your area, she will. But anyway, yeah. So my now, question
is,
to
is this Judith Simmer Brown?
Yes.
Yes, I know her. She's quite a well-known teacher and has, I think, probably had lots and lots of students, and was a very close student of Trungpa Rinpoche. Go ahead, please.
Yes. The reason I asked is that, you know, I had some practice during the retreat, and as what you said, I began to notice that my heart was, during that time, my heart was able to expand to, for me, it was very rich. I feel like sometimes I'm meant to ask you during one-on-one interview with you. I feel like a lot of times just sitting is very dry, which I also like. However, I want to expand a little bit so to further maybe my practice. But I don't know how to start.
Well, we could talk
you. Yeah.
We could talk about that in an interview. Had you come to me with what you're saying right now, I probably would have recommended you do a white taro practice. We talked about that, or have you done?
Yes, I did a few, but not know much about that.
Okay. Well, we can talk that about that in a one-on-one interview at some point. Take it further if you'd like.
Sure. Thank you, Polly.
Thank you. Yes.
June Chevalier, you've talked about seeing the spaciousness if something is feeling difficult. It seems like if I flash on trying to see the spaciousness, then there's an immediate grasping at the spaciousness. Does that grasping shut down on the whole situation?
For a while. But the most important thing is you're already telling me about it. You're aware that you're grasping at it. You don't have to stop doing that. It's awareness of that. There are practices that take us in different directions. So this is why I feel that Shikantaza is so powerful. Because anything that shows up in your mind or Shoka's mind or Sensha's mind, or anyone's mind, is going to be different than what's showing, and their relationship to it will be different. So there's no fundamental practice that we can do that can address that other than just observe what that is. So you're already telling me that you're watching the spaciousness open up, and then you're watching some part of consciousness develop some digits and try to get it or try to hold on to it or maintain it. And sometimes we spend hours trying to just find out, how can I just bring that spaciousness up and, you know, kind of recreate that, or can I return to that space? So all that needs to just show, just keep doing it. I spent one long, long retreat trying to understand how I could approach my teacher. I've never told this story before. So you triggered this somehow. I tried to understand how could I approach Trungpa. It might be because of Judith Simmer Brown, hearing her name took me back also. How can I approach Trungpa without being frightened? Because I knew that if I came in front of him, I would just be terrified and I wouldn't be able to ask any questions. So I went through, I did my own visualization. This was at a month-long retreat, a group retreat, and I sat with a group of people. And this is 45 years ago, something like that. And I imagined myself with a broom sweeping a pathway to him. And then I would come back and I would sweep away all of the fear that was in front of me. I just imagined, nobody ever told me to do this. Should I have done that? Would I teach somebody how to do that? Probably not. But that's what I was doing then, trying to do something to get rid of the fear rather than just look at the fear. It took a long time to be able to look at it rather than assume I had to do something about it. I had to stop being fearful. If you discover fearlessness, you'll see that fear hasn't gone anywhere. There's just no one who is afraid. The fear is still there. And this is when you receive that fear for the benefit of all beings who can, who can't. There are people who can't do this. They can't meditate. They can't do anything. You know, as when the fear arises, receive it. Walk right through it. Drink it, eat it, smell it, taste it, hear it, think it, feel it. Receive it on behalf of others. You can do that. There are no others. But what you're doing is a way of relating to the illusion of otherness, the illusion of other, by doing this for the benefit of the illusion of people who are suffering, because people are suffering. It's just that it's unreal. That doesn't mean the suffering is unreal.
Thank you, Bowen. Quite often negativity will make me make my physical body kind of freeze or feel stuck. And it feels like I can't receive, or like I'm kind of trying not to, or blocking it out somehow. How can I continue to receive when I'm paralyzed?
Just be aware that you can't receive. Don't beat it up. Don't do anything with it. Just sit there, frozen. Be aware that you're frozen. Just imagine you're sitting on a donkey. And the donkey won't go, and you have no spurs. Spurless. And you're just sitting, and the donkey will go. Just sit there. Donkey will go eventually. Sit still. Sit still and watch. Watch the frozenness. Don't bust through it. The frozenness is unreal. It's generated out of something else that's unreal. Fear, which is generated out of something else that is unreal. Other. There is no other. Everywhere you look, you see yourself. Everywhere you look, it's just you. It's not you, Junshu. Not you, pure appearance. It's just not other. Yes, sir.
Jesus, mind. What is confusion when it looks like that appears in other?
Get me a little closer to what you want to know.
Jesus, mind. I think I'm trying to figure out how to work with what looks like confusion in other, particularly if that's a mirror-like quality.
Yeah, it's your confusion. You may be relatively accurate at some point, but until you are responsible for what you're seeing, your projection, you have to be, it's like you're to blame for it, but you're relatively, may not be relatively, but it has to work in that way. So that way it can be more mirror-like. And that's going to show differently for each person. The way you ask the question, then I would say, that's your confusion. Not that I'm blaming you for it, and nor should you blame yourself. Go ahead.
So should I do nothing with that?
Yes, just look at it. What was the question?
I have another question.
Go ahead.
It seems like there's some desire to communicate or go into or do something with that confusion. Is that misunderstanding, feeling circularity?
Yeah, don't do anything with it, especially if you're talking about when you're sitting.
No, I'm talking about off the cushion, like in relationship.
Post-meditation, I would just do whatever comes up and watch it and observe it. And you'll get very good at observing through sitting on the cushion, deliberately doing nothing and training. It's like you're sharpening a blade that you're not using because you're sharpening it. You're sharpening it. It's like crossing a stone. But when you get up, then that blade, it's no stone, but there's a lot of vegetables. And then just chop away. Just a kind of a silly way of saying it, but it's like that. When you're sitting, watch what moves instead of moving.
When you're bowing, but when you say chop away.
Think, do, act, go over here, go over there. But don't do anything you don't have to do. Did I get close to what you were I'm almost going to ask me?
That's not permission to be mean or
no.
Get out your 8 or 15.
Of course not. Not permission to do anything.
When you're bowing, so when it feels like I want to do something that seems what I would consider somewhat violent.
Like kill somebody?
No, not that violent. But
threaten to kill.
But where is genuineness come in?
Where's what?
When there's intense negativity and the temptation is to do it is an outflow. How can I be genuine when that arises?
So that's the area in the 12 links on the chain of existence where there's the emotion, and then there's contact, and there's emotion, desire, wanting something else. And that right there, before you do anything about it, just be responsible for that feeling rather than going out and grasping, going out and pushing, going out and shutting down. Do nothing with it. Just, it's yours. Be responsible for your feelings. Not easy, because it's the impulse, the perception of what this is, and the impulse is to push on it or to threaten, to be aggressive. So some teachers say, let's just not have the desire. And I think, okay, well, go live on a mountaintop and you're where you're not triggered by anything other than you know, if you get out of the rain or something, but to live right in society, you know, with the insanity that's everywhere, and to live a sane and uplifted life is very, very difficult. Interact with other people, unless you, it's not that this would solve it, but unless you are completely responsible for your feelings and your emotions, blaming no one for anything, even if they trigger it, even if they come and push on you, take something away from that is yours, or not give you credit where you should have credit. You did that, and here they are taking credit for that. That can be quite aggravating.
So are there times in those intense situations when an outflow is genuine, Bowie?
Well, they're always genuine in the sense that they're dependently arisen.
But I'm talking about when you say your teacher told you to be genuine.
Yes, to be genuine is to be responsible for what's showing up in your mind stream without outflows. But that doesn't mean there won't be some outflows in the process of endeavoring to be responsible. Things may the holster, the knife may come out of the holster, or the gun may come out of the holster, or the sword may come out of the scabbard, and you just start swinging it. That can happen. If there's being a living being, it's always possible that some kind of intense rage could just show up. May have to happen. But there's really nothing to fix or correct. There's something to see there. And it's difficult. And we all are faced with our own sword and scabbard. Well, we all have to deal with some version of that. Some more obvious than others. But the idea is to get to know yourself rather than try to be somebody. This is why you're not going to hear me set up a standard that you have to live up to. There are standards, but the way you work with that standard is up to you. Some people can't just stop drinking. Like, well, just stop drinking. It's like, stop smoking cigarettes. Yeah, good luck with that. A terrible, terrible, very heavily addictive habit. I mean, it can be done, but it probably cannot do it out of just stubbornness or willpower. Just like the thinking process of worrying or fretting or your style, you mind me saying something about it? Your style is to tell a story about something that is relatively true, and before there's any possibility for you to see that you're making that up. I mean, it's true, you're using facts, but you put another story right on top of it. It's just like the next thing you know, you can't even find the initial story that got you started. So that's why awareness is so important, is to actually see that you're laminating them. Next thing, you're just so far away, now you're just totally upset about something and have a whole bunch of stories that you can go back to the third one from the last and start in the middle of that and replay that one, because that seemed to be pretty accurate, that put you in the victim seat.
So in those situations of those storied sandwiches, if awareness is present, what's to be done?
Oh, come on, you can do better than that. Give me a question.
Often when those situations occur, I'm very aware of the story layer.
Just write it when it's happening?
Yes.
So.
And the expectation is it'll go away. If I just say.
Well, and it will, because everything does. And eventually that goes away. It's just as a circle. It comes back. So you have to catch it. Awareness through sitting practice and meditation, train yourself so that you don't have random thoughts going through your head and emotions that you're not aware of. It's not about stopping thinking or emotions. It's about being very vividly aware of what is happening in the mind stream at any given time and not accepting, rejecting, and shutting down. That way that way you're acknowledging the unreality, illusory quality of the mind, thought patterns and emotions, rather than solidifying into this is true and that's false, belief, disbelief, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, be aware, be aware. And if you can, if you are endeavoring to slow down the story after story after story after story, which sometimes I've seen you, since you're allowing me to do this with your story, sometimes you start a new story before you've even finished the last one. You won't actually finish the sentence. You start right in with a new story, and then right in with a new story about. And quite often, it's not always about me, about something I've said or done or how I've acted, but it could be something someone else has done. And the idea there is to see that, to catch what I call the leading edge of that first story. So not so you can stop the story, so you can listen to it before you hook up your vocal cords. So you actually hear what you're about to say and listen to that right to you. And you heard me say this before, wait for the period. Don't put a semicolon in there so you can keep rambling and rambling and rambling. Allow there to be just a natural gap so that you can see. And then there's a possibility that you can reset. And one of the ways to reset is once that story is played out, before the next story starts, are you listening? Before the next story starts, just flash on gravity. So you use the body, because the mind is going like this. But you can't stop that. But you can flash on gravity. And you can just be here. Just Joshu Sasaki Roshi? No, it was that other old guy who said Buddha is the center of gravity. And I think there's a book by that title. More? Welcome. Thank you for asking. Yes.
Senshu Bowing, when I see a story coming up, my impulse is often to brush it off as just a story.
Yes.
Is it important for us to hear our stories or see them?
You should receive everything that shows up in the mind stream without accepting it, without rejecting it, and without ignoring it. So to push it away, to brush it off or something, is it's a form of aggression, and it's a form of ignoring. And it's tied up with all three poisons, the way you're describing it. And from knowing you, I would say, yes, that's what you're doing, is whisking it away. But if you don't really deal with it directly, then it just goes in the hopper and waits for the next time that gets triggered. The next time may be more intense, and you might have to be force-fed that story by the circumstances. More? Good question. Jixin, go ahead.
Jixin Bowing. Is not missing anything the same as not wanting anything else?
Yes.
Is it a form of knowing?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, that form of knowing, the way I responded to Jixin's question, is it is a form of knowing, but there's no object there. And there's no knower. It's just knowing, sometimes called wisdom. But one who operates or lives there doesn't have any position. A position may develop and it may not in any given situation, but there's no deliberating about something. I sometimes say it another way. I say, if two things show up, should I do this or this? I don't do anything with them. I don't figure them out. You might say, if anything, you just wait. And then one starts to fade away and the other starts to get stronger. And then I might take a walk over to Fells Park. Unlikely, it's much too lazy to do that. I had a really nice bicycle over there. Yeah, I'm looking at it. Or not, because my knees might hurt. I'm sure I can find some reasons. Anyone in here? Yes, sir.
What does it look like to observe a thought pattern without adding onto it?
So it could be different for you or for anyone in here, but my description of that is to watch it show up about some particular topic or something. And then if I'm sitting, I'm practicing, then it just runs out of steam. I don't do anything with it. It won't keep going unless you get in there and bump on it and make it produce more ideas, thoughts, images about a particular topic. So it's going to be quite a bit different each time. And for each person and for you personally, just less is better. And the way you might get a taste of that is by going into one of the sense consciousnesses, sense of touch, and rotating between that. I call it ASAP, alternating sense awareness. You've heard me talk about that. Okay, so you're sitting there daydreaming about something, thinking about some project or some conversation with someone, and you see that, and then so to not add on to that, you flash on the sense of gravity or touch or how your clothes feel, and you go from that to the sense of seeing. It might be the color of the wall you're looking at, and then you might come back just casually, alternately back and forth between those two sense consciousnesses. The thought patterns may stop or may stop, or they may continue, but they're going to get company, and they get company by something that does not think feeling, something that does not think seeing, something that does not think hearing. Those are all on receive. The sense of seeing produces no sights. It's just a receiver in consciousness, whereas the mind stream gets in, infiltrates all those sense fields, and doubles up on everything. It makes it very difficult to just see, just smell, just taste. There's always thoughts about it. More?
Could I be reinforcing that I'm experiencing that thought pattern?
Could you be reinforcing what?
That I am experiencing that thought pattern by, going through those cycles.
The ones that I described of feeling?
Yeah, like, if I'm sitting, I go through the thought pattern, and I realize that I'm doing that, and I look at the wall and remind myself what the wall looks like, then I go right back into the same thought pattern.
That's all of that is awareness.
Yeah.
Outcome is not important. Outflow is important to watch. So watch what you're thinking. Observe what's coming and going. Don't interfere with it. Do it. And what does that mean? You are going to have to watch how much you can't help but do that. And that's awareness. That's how it's done. That's the only way you'll get towards any kind of fundamental understanding of the nature of ego or humility. The only way that can happen, where you just are not presumptuous about anything anymore. You don't believe your thoughts. You don't disbelieve your thoughts. And you certainly don't ignore your thoughts. You just receive. Everything is none of your business, and it's completely your responsibility at the same time. Well, must have another one in there somewhere tucked away. Thank you for that question, sir. Yuhong, do you have another question?
Yes, Yuhong Baoying. When I hear the instruction from the Zen teacher, and he probably just in general, he asked us, me, to come back to the breathing. It sounds very, very good. But when I thought of you, just sit and observe, but we practice Shikantaza. If this is stupid, but I still want to hear the answer. So is that just observing is your version of the instruction in Shikantaza practice?
So the way I teach is very specific, and it's based on a half a century of meditating. And I've spent lots of time doing that kind of coming back to the breathing and all of that. And I think it's okay if you want to do that. But that's the problem with going and studying with other teachers. It's not wrong. I would say go do it. But if you go and study under someone like Judith Summer Brown, who's a great teacher, she's really well known, much more well known than this old man. And she's even younger than I am, I think. But I would say that's the problem. If you go there and say, well, they say this. And I'm saying you really need to settle on one teacher and listen to that person. You haven't done anything wrong by going and studying under another person. You can do whatever you want to do. There's lots of teachings. But it makes it very difficult if people are coming from different understandings of the nature of consciousness. And I do not teach what is taught in Shambhala or in the Kagyu tradition, other than the tantric practices we're doing a little bit of. So I would say if you want to return to your breath, then do that for 6 months. Get a good taste of it. I did it for decades. That's how I know that I don't want to teach that. The tendency to isolate and make a meditative part of the consciousness, a personality that you return to because it feels safe. I follow my breath, and I don't think I've let off my breath once in the last hour. I follow my breath, and when thoughts arose, I label thinker, however they're teaching it, or Judith is teaching it, or anyone else for that matter. But it is not Shikantaza as I understand it. Now, they may call it Shikantaza, but they can do whatever they want. You can, a frog is not a turtle.
Hong Baoing, yeah, that's from another Zen master. It's also there. The reason I ask is I study under you. That's what I know for sure. But I just want to know, like, the Shikantaza, because I do not really know much about this. Just hear your instruction facing the wall or find a point that I can look around.
You have my books, and you've been here to the monastery. And as far as I'm concerned, you're practicing Shikantaza. You're endeavoring to sit still and experience your mind as it arises, whether thoughts, emotions, memories, feelings, daydream about things, falling asleep, all of that is Shikantaza. Even if you add on to it and have commentaries, the kind of meditation I teach is extremely radical and minimal. Training a mind to follow the breath or something like that, it's a good practice. It does bring you some stability, but it will not take you into the fundamental nature of reality that I know of. I'm not saying there might be hundreds of realized beings who have practiced that. I have not met them because I don't get out much.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you. That's a good area for questions if anyone has them there. It's not that I'm right and they're wrong. It's just practice one particular way. It's hard to practice. It's not the same thing. It would be like trying to play football and hockey at the same time. Isn't it? Yeah. That's not funny. It's like trying to do two different things at once. Pick one. If you want to do Shikantaza, do that. If you want to do Shamatha Vipassana, I have people who practice quite a bit of Shamatha Vipassana, but they do it under my instruction. I tell them how to do it, and I've been trained to do that also, just as other people have. And but I would say, okay, do that for 3 days, or do that just in the morning and the afternoon. Haven't we? We've done some of that. Talked about different ways to work with the mind where you hold a tight control over it by following the breath, labeling thinking, return to the breath. There's several ways of doing it. If you do a shamatha practice, according to His Holiness the 17th Karmapa, maybe I've talked about this before, he has you sit still, hands on your knees like so, and count your breath. Not a 1 to 10, but not just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 time. He has you count 1 on the out-breath, 1 on the in-breath, then 2 on the out-breath, and 2 on the in-breath, all the way up to 10. And if you lose track, you return to 1. So that's a very, very tight, controlled way of using the fourth skandha of thinking, to use a structure in consciousness that aligns itself more closely with that than any of the other ones. This is 4. 4, 5, 5, and this creates a structure in consciousness that appears like stability. Is it? Well, I practiced it a long time, and I don't think it's a good idea. Does that mean I am arguing with the whole Kagyu and Tsongkhapa, Nyingma and Gelugpa tradition of Tibetan Buddhism? No, they should do whatever they want to do. I think they're, if you can get that kind of training from a certified Lama, you should get it. I don't have any credentials other than I was ordained as a Soto Zen priest. Should we close? I'm just watching your body language. I don't have anybody else here to tell me to stop. Is that a cat you have in your... Deb, is that a cat? Is that your cat? I'm
bowing. Yes, it is.
Nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, nice of them to attend.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
I did have a question around like the tendency to make a meditator or like that meditative. Yeah.
So this question is coming from someone who just today came out of a 30-day solitary retreat. So this is not going to be just some kind of ordinary question. Is it? Jodo. Go ahead, hit me with it.
It seems like even with a formless practice, we can still do that. The tendency to want to find a safe space and just hide out there for hours.
Yes.
How do we actually do a formless practice?
You're doing it. You're doing it. It's just that question tells me you're doing it. That's how it's done. You just haven't been doing it that long. How long have you been sitting? Besides the 30 days.
9 years.
9 years? That's not very much. Sorry. It takes a while. I'm not kidding. It takes a while to do this. What else are you going to do with your life? I think I told that to, said that recently, and that's something Susan noticed that was a helpful for me to say that. What else are you going to do? This is a great thing to do. It might look like you're not doing much, but you're working with that which does not die. That which does not die. There's an aspect of your being that does not come into existence and therefore cannot pass out of existence. You could call it consciousness. Call it what you want. Call it chicken soup. Okay, let's get off the lifeboats.
Hi, my name is Shoto, and I am a monk at Sokukoji, where I am committed to training my mind under the guidance of my teacher, Sokuzan. We rely on your support for much of what we offer here. This includes building projects to create space for full-time and part-time practice residents. Thank you for your help.